Okay, page 121, part four, the children of self-love and pride. And St. Paisios is going to introduce three children, envy, anger, and sorrow. The first one, chapter one, envy. And the last paragraph in the chapter is here as an introductory quotation. When a person gets to the point of rejoicing over the progress of others, then Christ will grant him all the progress of the others. And then, naturally, both his progress and his joy will be immense. And usually, we're concerned about whose progress? My progress.
My progress.
My progress. Sometimes, if we're exclusively concerned about that, we can compare ourselves to others and say, oh, this person's getting ahead of me, and oh, I'm glad that person tripped and is not getting up to me. You know, that's not helpful to us.
No.
Okay, the poison of envy, one of the greatest passions. Yolanda, I am jealous of a certain sister. And Elder Paisios responds, I know which sister you're jealous of, but I've learned that she's also jealous of you. I will pray that both of you become jealous of the zealous prophet Elijah, that he may dispel your jealousness and grant you a portion of his divine zealousness. And Elder Paisios kind of tips his hand here as far as something that he's going to talk about further on, when he says that he will pray that both of these sisters become jealous of Prophet Elijah. There's somebody worth being jealous of. And he'll explain that. Envy is such a foolish vice. All it takes for one to overcome it is a bit of thought. It doesn't require great struggles and a lot of asceticism. But you must not let the passion of envy master you, for it is one of the greatest passions. So, one of the greatest passions, but according to him, doesn't require great struggle or a lot of asceticism to overcome. Envy leads to malice and calumny, and calumny can do much more harm than malice. Calumny, not a word you hear.
I did look it up.
On the evening news.
Right, I did look it up. I put down the book and I looked it up. If I remember right, it's something to do with I thought it had something to do with, it seemed like kind of like malice, like you were doing something to someone to mess them up or
making false statements about someone.
Make a false statement. Okay, that's what it was. Yeah.
In order to damage their reputation.
Yes.
Yeah, is what I found when I looked it up because I wanted to have
Yeah, it sounds right. It was a couple of days ago when I read it, and I think that's what I remember reading.
The definition I found said making false and defamatory statements to damage someone's reputation. So defamatory, fame, defame.
Those
to say something to hurt somebody's good reputation, destroy their good name, their good fame. Slander, character assassination. So if we're envious of someone, we try to think of some way to take them down a peg.
Yeah.
You know?
If we know them, if we know them good enough, we might actually know something really bad that we can use against them, which is just as bad as making up something.
Yeah, there's this way that I envy them, but then on the other hand, they have these other shortcomings.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. And it's all because of the envy that we do it. So we're hurting them, and, well, monks call gossip spiritual murder. You hear an awful lot of gossip. Sometimes people feel very righteous, like they're doing something good on behalf of the church when they gossip. It's a really terrible thing when you think about it, but it happens, and the monks call it spiritual murder. Next page. Yolanda, what does envy consist of? You mean, what does it not consist of? It consists of pride, egoism, self-love. It contains neither a shred of love nor, naturally, of humility. If one is envious, it is impossible for him to love. It is not possible for one to feel envy and love at the same time. Envy contaminates love and goodness like a dead mouse contaminates all the oil in a container after it's fallen into it. Yeranda, I think I am envious because inwardly I don't feel fulfilled. How can you feel fulfilled when you want everything for yourself? And what's he saying now? If you're going to feel fulfilled, you have to want things for others. Because being focused on yourself to the point that you want everything for yourself, it separates you from others. We're not self-sufficient. And one of those others certainly includes God. So how can we be fulfilled without God, without other people, all by ourselves, wanting everything for ourselves, being envious of anyone who has something that we want for ourselves? You see what a terrible condition it is. I'm going to go down to the last four lines on the page. If God brings us into paradise and we haven't been delivered of envy, even there we will not find consolation because we will still have the same irrational desires, even if we were brought into paradise, if we still haven't dealt with envy. We would have irrational desires. Being surrounded by the saints, we'd be envious of the saints. On page 125, he has a long discussion of why the passion of envy is stronger in women than in men. Well, it's a nun asking him the question. They seem to agree. There doesn't seem to be any question in either of their minds that envy is stronger in women than in men. Since a woman by nature has an abundance of goodness and love, the devil attacks her more. He tosses venomous jealousy at her and poisons her love. Once her love is poisoned and becomes malevolent, then instead of being a bee, and we know that bees gather honey, goodness, and gathering honey and goodness, it reminds us of Philotimo, because Philotimo is the gathering and the concentration of good. It's one of the things that he says about Philotimo. So instead of being a bee, a woman becomes a hornet and exceeds the grit of a man, a stinging hornet. Has more grittiness, more tenaciousness, and instinct to attack and wound, even more than a man, according to Elder Paisios. When a man envies, it's enough for him not to see the person he envies, but it's not enough for a woman. For a woman, the person she envies has to be taken out of her sight, and that's still not enough. That person must be taken out for good. What does it mean, taken out for good? Take them out. Get rid of them. In other words, she wants to be certain the job is complete. So it's a vicious, it's like it's so much the opposite of love. And Elder Paisios sees woman as motherly, whether she has children or whether she doesn't, because it is women who bear children. And the raising of children depends on the love of a woman as a mother. He just sees that as part of something that is special to a woman. Love is what a woman is about. And envy, since it drives out love, and it's not possible to be envious and have love at the same time, for a woman, he sees it as being more of a spiritual disaster even than for a man. Malevolence, when coupled with jealousy and stubbornness, can reach demonic levels. Jumping down to the next paragraph, a woman ought to be especially careful about envy. She must remove her own self from her love in order to keep her abundant love pure, so that it is a selfless love. If a woman is a children and she loves her children as possessions, she's not going to love them for their own sake. The love of a mother is meant to be a selfless love. That's the kind of love that a mother needs to have in order to raise her children rightly and well. And so, since women, according to Elder Paisios, have this quality of this kind of pure love, selfless love, envy can poison it, like that dead mouse falling into the vat of oil that dies, corrupts. It corrupts the love of a good woman. How can you remove yourself from your love in order to keep your love pure? It can be done by rising above the daily trifles, the little things in life that irritate us, and cultivating laventia and spiritual nobility, a sense of sacrifice. The antidote for envy is spiritual nobility, but unfortunately there are few who possess it. Did you look up laventia?
I didn't, but I remember that was a word I had before.
It is. It's one of his special words,
yeah.
Along with Philotimon. And I looked up, I found a little article on laventia. I'm not going to read all of it. Laventia is an internal, never defeated excellence in the midst of hardships and humiliation. It is always victorious, even in the midst of apparent defeat. This excellence is best exemplified. The best example of this excellence is self-sacrifice on behalf of others. These are the characteristics of laventia, and you can see how it fits together with Elder Paisios' understanding of the kind of love that is so essential for a woman in particular. But then he says some interesting things, some things that I thought were very interesting. And when I say he, I mean John Sanadopoulos, who wrote this on his website, Mystagogy Research Center. He says, though laventia is more commonly applied to young men, it could apply to all men. And curiously enough, Elder Paisios is evidently doing something that is a little bit unique by applying laventia in particular to women, not just especially to young men. And John Sanadopoulos says that typically the term laventia is applied to young men. And you can think of a young man with lots of grit, determination, able to bounce back whenever bad things happen to them, especially some particular young men, and boys for sure. They're very resilient, children in general are, but boys can be very resilient and just not knocked down and kept down by all the bad hardships and humiliation. They come back, never defeated by hardships and humiliation. So you can see that that would apply to a young man characteristically. And then he says something else, Sandiopoulos, that applies to young men. A person with this kind of quality shows this quality through his determination in displaying a good and manly heart. A good and manly heart. And this, Elder Paisios, applies to women. I'll come back to that because there's a kind of a final definition here that I want to read. Laventia means courage, honesty, generosity of heart, directness, manliness, and in general, the willingness to lay down one's life for others. And you remember at the end of the last chapter, on page 120, Elder Paisios wrote a telegram to one of the young sisters who wasn't yet fully accepted as a nun. She was a novice sister just starting out, and he wrote her a telegram where he encouraged her to stop condemning others. And he says, page 120, to stop condemning others, one must be manly. And this is what he's recommending to a woman, to be manly. And we made the point last week that when Elder Paisios talks about being manly, he means being a noble and high-hearted human being with the nobility of Christ, not just the nobility of, like the ancient Greeks had these terms, Philotimo and Laventia, in their list of virtues. But they had to do mainly with the virtues of a warrior, and they were external virtues of courage in action and war and that sort of thing. But with Christianity, those virtues are revealed to the Greeks as being internal virtues, just like the beauty of the soul is more important than the beauty of the physical body, which was very important to the ancient Greeks. And so all those virtues become, for a Christian, internalized, and also the ultimate example is Christ himself, Jesus Christ is the new man, the new Adam. But when we say man, we don't just mean the new male, leaving out women. When we say the new man, we include men and women together. As it says in Genesis, male and female, he created them. Male and female, God created mankind. Mankind, as opposed to lizard kind or mouse kind. This is mankind. So be manly. And this is a manly quality in Christian terms, this Leventia. And Elder Paisio sees it as the quality that is most critical for a woman if she is going to guard herself about envy. So it's a real focus on the spiritual struggle of women. But of course, not just women.
Yeah.
You know, not just women. But he sees it as something that is critical for a woman to maintain her special kind of love. Leventia is critical for her. It's the only real antidote, you might say, spiritual antidote to envy. Okay, does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. Envy is not a good thing.
No, it's not. It's not a good thing. But Leventia is a very good thing. Page 126. Gueranda, I don't have any stamina. Elder Paisios, he's suggesting to this nun, maybe you're envious. That's why you have no stamina. Gueranda, I feel spiritually deficient and feeble. And he encourages her in a way, but at the same time, he gives her advice. You have many strengths, but you are wasting them. You're frittering them away through your foolish jealousness. Although you are a noble person, you torment yourself as if you were some unfortunate street urchin. So he's telling her, you have a lot of qualities that you should be developing instead of being jealous of the good qualities of others. Be careful, because envy can sap all your physical and spiritual strength, which you could otherwise have offered as a sacrifice to God. Envy weakens us spiritually. The apostles, and he gives an example from Scripture about the apostles. The apostles, having driven out or expelled other demons, were not able to expel the demon from the possessed child. We just had this reading a week or so ago, because they were envious of the three disciples, Peter, James, and John, Jesus had taken to Mount Tabor for his transfiguration. You remember that when Peter, James, and John and Jesus came down, the apostles were with this man whose child is a lunatic, and they can't do the healing of him. And Elder Paisios is suggesting that envy of the three disciples that were taken up on Mount Tabor is one of the reasons. Christ could have taken all the disciples, but not all of them had the capacity yet to receive the mystery. And so he only took the three who had greater capacity at that point. Now, it wasn't something about all the rest of the apostles that they should feel envious of. They just weren't at that point yet. Did you think he did not love the other disciples as well, or that he loved John more than the others? No. But John, for his part, loved Christ more than the other disciples loved him, which is why he was better able to understand the love of Christ. He had greater capacity, a bigger battery, in the sense that he's able to get more and more fully charged, have more spiritual strength and energy. See how envy distanced the grace of God from the other disciples, making them incapable of healing the possessed child. He who buries his own gifts envies the gifts of others. This is one of the central sections in this chapter, I think. An envious person can be helped to overcome his jealousness if he becomes aware of the gifts which God has endowed him and fully utilizes them. So forget about others and start working on the gifts that you have. Then he will stop being envious and his life will be paradise. Many people take no account of their own gifts. They see only the gifts of others and are overcome by envy. But it's like you're not doing anything with your own life, with your own gifts. out of envy. They view themselves as having been wronged, as lesser, and end up tormenting themselves and making their lives miserable. And I have a note to myself here in the margin. Do your own work, live your own life. And I have a question to myself. Is fantasy an enemy? Fantasy is just so important today. People sustain themselves on the basis of fantasies today, more than I think than they have in the past. Most of the movies that are produced are fantasies, and people don't believe them, but they go to make themselves feel better. Just the daydream, kind of, and get lost in a sense of strength and power that they don't have, imagining the kind of power that they would like to have. And when you're doing that, you're not doing anything with your own abilities, your own capacities. You're just being entertained. Elder Paisios gives the example of Cain and Abel. Cain did not seek out his own gifts, but looked upon the gifts of Abel and was jealous of them, which is how he cultivated malicious envy toward his brother. Drove out love. If he drives out love, he turns against God, and from envy he went on to murder his brother. And if he had focused on himself, in terms of, in a good sense, as Elder Paisios would say, developing his own gifts spiritually, he might have had more and greater blessings than Abel had. It's an interesting point, you know, to make about Cain and Abel. Page 128. One can rejoice over the gifts of others if he uses his own gifts instead of burying them. And I was trying to think of somebody that I envied. I don't envy a lot of the things that people think are really important. Well, I'll tell you, I'll put it this way. I read, Father Marcus sent out and people posted on Facebook, a sermon that Father Matthew Baker had written a few years ago. It was wonderful. It was on the Door Mission. It was on the Door Mission about the Theotokos, about Mary. And it was just a wonderful, wonderful sermon. And it was specifically and particularly a sermon that I would never have given. And I don't know of anywhere that I've ever read anything exactly like what Father Matthew pointed out. And yet it was his clear, clue, obviously fits together with everything deeply Orthodox. It was just a beautiful, beautiful, wonderful sermon. And I did get a little touch of, I got a touch of envy when reading it, because it was something noble, good, wonderful, and not in my capacity to have done that sermon. You know, I very nearly used it as the basis for the sermon for that week, but you're responsible to give the sermon that is supposed to be given that day, to figure out what it is and do it, and that wasn't it. It was Father Matthew's sermon for Theotokos, for the Door Mission. I couldn't even borrow it. But, you know, Father Matthew Baker, if you remember, he was 2 years ago. He had a large family of children. He was a young man, brilliant, brilliant young man, on his way to certainly, eventually, he would have become a great scholar. He was almost finished his PhD. He was a PhD candidate at Fordham University. And while he was driving in the winter in his van with his children, I think his wife was not with him, there was an accident. And his children were all okay, but he was killed. So this is the man that I envy, imagine. But that sermon was wonderful. Made me think. But certainly I have felt envy. The thing to do is to rejoice over the gift, back to 128, rejoice over the gift that Father Matthew had, and focus on doing whatever it is that I can do instead of being envious, which is because envy stops you from doing anything. If you're envious, you're not doing anything. And Elder Paisios gives an example of one of the nuns who has a beautiful voice but doesn't want to chant. So she's burying her gift. She's not using it. You have a gift, you're responsible to use it, not for vanity, but as a sacrifice, you know, to offer it up to God. But because she has this gift, when she hears other people chanting, especially this particular one nun whose voice is not very good, she has a problem. She gets very upset hearing it. But she doesn't understand this nun doesn't understand that although God has given her a better voice, she's not cultivating it. She's not using it. Instead, because she has this gift, she's using it to condemn this other poor nun who is doing the best she can, praising God with the voice that she has. Each person, St. Paisio says, should look to see if they actually have within themselves the very same blessing they envy in someone else. So that's it. If we envy a gift that someone else has, it may be there's a connection between that gift and a gift that we have that we're not doing anything with. You know, later on he talks about how we look at, or maybe it's something else that I read somewhere, I'm not sure, recently. We look at the great saints and we don't realize, we don't think about the great spiritual struggle that it took for them to reach the point that they are, so that they are the spiritual blessing to others that they are, like Elder Paisios. We don't think of that. And we envy their gifts, just amazed by them. But we're not working on our own spiritual life. And we forget about how it took incredible spiritual effort in order for Elder Paisios to become the man that has been such a blessing, you know, to so many, you know, millions of people. And if that gift isn't our gift, maybe God has given us a different gift. God is not unjust to anyone. He has given each person a unique gift that will help him with his spiritual progress if we use it. If we use it, if we waste our time being envious of others, then we're not doing anything with ourselves. We're not doing anything with our own gifts. Last full paragraph on the page. Each person should find the gift that God has given him and praise the benevolent God, not with pride or hypocrisy, but with humility, by recognizing that he has not measured up to God's blessings and should do so in the future. So whatever gift we have and we can locate it, we should be humble enough to appreciate, to be thankful for that gift and realize the responsibility that we have to do the best we can to make that gift a blessing, you know, to us and not a curse. If we're proud of it and we use it to act like we're better than others who may not have that particular gift, even though it's a little small, it could be a small gift, people still will focus on it, be proud about it. Well, then that gift is a curse to us. So we, our spiritual responsibility is to humbly accept that gift as the means of our spiritual effort. The work, focusing on the work, forgetting about ourselves. I think it's related to that idea. When I was reading this chapter today, I just wondered, how long has it been since Elder Paisios has fallen asleep? So I checked. It was 1994, July, and when he died. So 23 years ago. 23 years.
Man, I was in Greece when he was alive.
Yeah, that's something.
But I never made it to the Holy Mount. I didn't even know I was a Protestant. So back then, we were there in the military.
You were in the military there?
Yeah, I was in the Army, and we went. We shot down a drone airplane with our Hawk air missile system.
Oh. So, was it one of ours? Was it for practice or was somebody else's?
Yeah, we shot down a drone over the ocean. There's nobody in the plane.
That's good. It's like skeet shooting, only big.
Yeah, both big giant missiles and a big airplane.
Okay, middle paragraph on page 129. We should not be ungrateful to God, our good Father, who has endowed all his creatures with various gifts. That's the case because all of us need a gift that becomes our spiritual discipline. It becomes serving that gift to the glory of God in humility. Instead of using it pridefully, where it will do us no good, do us bad, and it'll do us a disservice. So each one of us, we all have a gift, gifts of some kind, but we need to use them to our salvation. He knows what each one of us needs, so that we will not be harmed. We act like little children who complain because their father has not given them a frango. A frango is a coin, has not given them a coin, a silver coin or a gold coin, as he has to our brothers or sisters, when in fact he has given us paper money that is worth 100 of that coin, because we figure it's only paper, while the metal coins given to our brothers and sisters seem more attractive to us. And that's we envy someone who has something that seems better than what we have. We may have something that's worth even more and just ignore it, you know, or just throw it away, not use it. As when we don't use a gift, it's like throwing it away. Bottom of the page. I am envious, Yolanda, of a sister because I see that she has humility, simplicity, and devotion. Over to the next page. By no means do I want anything bad to happen to her. I don't wish that the other person has no virtues. I only wish that I too could have some. And Elder Paracio's response is, well then, let's split the virtues between the two of you so that you can each have half. Don't worry, you have the good kind of envy. You covet earnestly the best gifts. That's from 1 Corinthians. So she asks Elder Paracios, Yolanda, is there such a thing as good envy? Yes. When one is envious for the good the others have and at the same time rejoices in their progress, then such envy is good. Now, we could be envious for the good that someone else has, and then it could be the bad kind of envy that we, you know, resent it, we rejoice when they fail, when all of a sudden they look bad, we say, ah, ha, ha, you know. However, if one is upset when we see someone else progressing, or if one is secretly pleased by another's hardship, then that kind of envy is bad. But it's important for us to realize that there is a good kind of envy. I'll remember back, way back at the beginning, that he kind of tipped his hand that there is a good kind of envy when he was talking about you should envy the prophet Elijah.
Elijah.
Yolanda, how can I acquire the good kind of envy? Try to purify the envy within so that it can become an emulous desire. Emulous just means a desire to emulate. So we want to, I want to be like that, you know.
Yeah.
That's how I want to be. Rejoice over the progress the other sister is making and struggle to emulate her. This will transform you spiritually, and the grace of God will remain with you. And this reminded me of, well, a couple things. First one was, you know, kind of athletes often kind of compete in a positive kind of way without resenting each other. Like if you're on the Yankees in one of their great eras playing along with some of the greatest players that have ever been in the game, you struggle to emulate them, they struggle to emulate you, you both make each other better than you would have been. That happens among athletes seeking to emulate, motivated by a spirit of rivalry in a good sense, because you're all striving for the same kind of excellence that you recognize in one another, but you know, and you rejoice in the development of your fellow teammates, and it makes all of you better. There's a similar thing that was discussed in the book Layman in the Desert. In that book, he talks about Christian friendship, where Christian friendship, what you share in common is a common interest in purity of heart. So that if we are, say, in a parish, if we are competing with one another like a team, you know, and we're all after the excellence of purity of heart, and we rejoice when others excel in greater and greater purity of heart, instead of envying one another, instead of seeing, oh, so-and-so messed up, yeah, that'll show everybody not as good as everybody thinks she was. Instead of that, then if we have this making, that we should be making a common effort toward purity of heart. And that's what unites us. You know, just like, you know, the pursuit of excellence in on a baseball team. So I think there's the, that's part of what he's talking about. That's a good kind of envy. Emulous desire, desire to emulate others who are spiritually making an effort. And my spiritual effort and another person's spiritual effort, it's not going to be the same because I have to deal with me, they have to deal with themselves. If they're doing well dealing with themselves, it should inspire me to make an effort to deal well with myself as well. So that's the good kind of envy. But there's a caution. The good kind of envy can become the bad kind. We have to work on it diligently, be careful and attentive, and make sure that we don't fall into envy of others and their gifts that we don't have. Instead, focus on the task of our own spiritual effort, our own spiritual life. How can you tell? She says she's not always sure if what she feels for another sister's progress is the good or the bad kind of envy. And he advises her, ask yourself, if this sister did something wonderful, wonderful, would you be jealous? Or ask, if the sister fell into temptation and fell in the estimation of others, would you be glad or sad? From the answer, you'll know what kind of envy you have, whether it's good or bad. For example, if you found out that the sister that you envy became lazy, doesn't work on her spiritual life, and instead records the Jesus prayer on a tape recorder, Lord Jesus Christ, have mercy on me, and just played the tape over and over and over again. No, that's her prayer. Would you be happy or upset? Would you be concerned? Would you say, look how bad she messed up. You know, look at this awful thing that she did. That's terrible. You know, and it makes me feel so much better because she's just not making progress at all. You know, I would never do a thing like that. You know, how can this person that, you know, ought to know better do such a horrible thing? But at the same time, it makes you feel better than that person. That's not good. That's not good.
I've actually done that in my past.
What's that? Recorded the Jesus
prayer? Recorded the Jesus prayer. Put it in my ears and while I'm working and trying to say it along with it.
Well...
But maybe I just
best,
that
you, best that you say it. I mean, it's not like it's hard to remember.
Yeah.
Right?
Best just to say it, yeah.
Yeah. So repetition all by itself is not so much of a help. Okay, there's really only one more page one more comment that I wanted to emphasize, and that's at the bottom of page 132, and it is the same as the quotation that the chapter starts out with. When a person gets to the point of rejoicing over the progress of others, Christ will grant him all the progress of the others so that he'll rejoice as much as all of them. All of the rejoicing of all of those people who are making progress will become his rejoicing because he's rejoicing for all of them and their progress. And then naturally, both his progress and his joy will be immense. You know, you're sharing in the common effort of this spiritual effort. So that's how you fight the poison of envy, which can kill, put an end to our spiritual effort. Those are the things that I wanted to point out in that chapter. And since we're just kind of on our own tonight, I'm not going to try to run out the clock. But if there's anything in here that you'd like to talk about, or if there are examples that it made you think of, we could talk about those. What do you think about envy? No problems with envy?
No.
I gave an example of my envious. I could be envious of, I'm a priest, I know a lot of priests. These priests have great capacities, they're all different than me. I always say that, what I think of is when I was in the Navy and I went to Yeoman A School, where they teach you how to be a yeoman. And it wasn't boot camp. Boot camp was pretty tough. But this was more of an educational environment, but particular tasks that we had to learn. But we had a lot more free time, a lot more social time, got to know each other better. And I've always felt as though, it's probably different now because it's a volunteer service, but then it wasn't. You know, there was a draft. I wasn't drafted, I enlisted. But there were people from all different levels of society and life when I was there. And I've never known so many people who were so different, you know, from one another. There was no common type. They were really, really different. But we were all there kind of doing the same thing and got to know each other and we took care of each other. We were concerned about each other. It's kind of a common characteristic, you know, in the service, I think, that you're concerned about other people that you work with. even though those people may be very, very different from you, even though you may not have anything in common with them at all, you do have in common with them the fact that you're there to do whatever job it is you're there to do. And I didn't have that kind of experience again until I was at seminary. Because at seminary, and you would think that at seminary, there's a type. There was no type. It was just like being in the Navy. There were the most different people, people more different from one another than any other group of people that I had been with since I had been in the Navy at that time. So, you know, that was just the case. And with priests, they are talented people. They all have gifts. Those gifts are all different. You would think, well, priests, they need to be able to do this list of things. Well, yeah, you need to be able to do those things. But whatever it is that you're good at becomes important. And it becomes important for you to, just like in spiritual life, if you're not a priest, exactly as Elder Paisio says, and everybody works on the gift that they have, and they apply that to their life as a priest, and that's just the way it is. So it's a situation where you have a lot of talented people, very, 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 very different, but accomplished, a lot of them in wonderful ways. It would be very easy to be envious of Father Marcus, who's a great administrator, who has lots of talents that are not my talents, liturgical talents that I don't have, or I could pick almost any priest and think of a talent, an ability that I don't have that's different from mine. So it's like that, I think, in all walks of life. Each one of us has a talent that we feel like is just nothing compared with the great talents of the people around us, and we can be envious. But this advice that Elder Paisios is giving us is the only thing that will encourage us to focus on our own spiritual effort. We have to work within ourselves. Just being envious of others is not going to help us at all. So it was a meaningful chapter for me. I kind of didn't think it would be, to tell you the truth. Because I think we don't always realize when we're envious of others. Maybe because we're so good at taking them down a peg, you know, to saying bad things about them to ourselves. And we don't realize it's because of envy. So it takes a little thought, which is what Elder Paisio says right at the beginning. But as he says, one of the things you can deal with, you don't have to make a huge ascetic effort to change your attitude when it comes to envy. Yeah. You just have to be aware, make that adjustment. Say, this is no good, I need to work on something else. And if you turn away from it and you work on something else, then you're gonna forget about it. So it's not as difficult as some temptations.
When I went to that monastery 3 years ago, I guess it's been now, the Hermitage of the Holy Cross Monastery.
Right.
They had Russell and I work together one of the afternoons on putting a couple of cabinets together, like the metal cabinets. And there was instructions there and stuff like that. And we were supposed to get these two done in like a 3 hour period, and have, if we could get those done, then we're gonna have something else for us to do. It took us the whole 3 hours to do it. And I just made the comment to Russell, I said, you know, if this was Chris Burt here by himself, he'd have probably had these done in 20 minutes. He says, yeah, but we're not Chris Burt. We're just gonna be the best we can be.
That's a good example.
Russell set me straight. He said, we're gonna do the best we can, and we're gonna get it done.
Yeah, that was a good thought on your brother's part.
Yeah. He said, well, we can do it. And we did. You know, we got those two metal cabinets together in the period of time that they gave us. But if we could have got them done earlier, they were going to give us another project too. You know? But we weren't able to do that.
Okay.